Ms. Bidding.
Okay. Mr. Dugan, you'll have to move your equipment. Okay. This item, item number nine, is will be presented by Jennifer Bidding. As you know, Jennifer left us for a year to get a master's degree in sustainable development from University of Cambridge in England. Jennifer came back in October, was it, of last year. And so we wanted to put this item on the board's agenda. We know that you are interested in sustainable development and low-impact development and the work that Jennifer's done. I wanted to just mention to you that Jennifer graduated with distinction, and that means that she is welcome to come back to the University of Cambridge and get her PhD if she elects to do so. She was also elected class president. And I think all of you know it, but Cambridge University is, the University of Cambridge, is one of the leading universities in the world. Depending on which list you look at, they're ranked one, two, or three consistently. And some other folks have graduated from that university: Isaac Newton, Charles Darwin, and a fellow named Stephen Hawking. So I think Jennifer is in pretty good company. They've produced, the graduates of the university have received 81 Nobel Prizes, which is more than any other university in the world. So congratulations, Jennifer, and welcome back. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for that introduction.
I think he's very proud of you. You know that?
I think we all are.
I'd like to say this is a reflection on Region 3, but I don't think we can really take any credit.
I'm not sure that we can meet that standard. Yeah. But
it's all in the water.
Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity to share a little bit about what I learned last year while studying for my master's degree. The Center for Sustainable Development is housed in the Department of Engineering at Cambridge University. It has two purposes. The first is to administer the master's degree in Engineering for Sustainable Development, and the second is professional development. My course was four terms long. The first two terms were classroom-style education, and the second two terms were research. The information I'm going to present here is a result of my research. In my staff report, you will find a link to my full dissertation, which is posted on our webpage. Attached to my staff report is a three-page summary of my dissertation, as well as the selection tool I created. I'd like to begin with a bit of background about sustainable development and sustainable drainage and how they relate to the selection of best management practices. Next, I'll describe my objective of my dissertation, the things I considered, and the solution I proposed. Finally, I will describe what I am doing with the results of my dissertation now that I am back. What is probably the most well-known and most widely accepted definition of sustainable development comes from the 1987 United Nations Brundtland Report, which states that sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of the future generations to meet their own needs. This concept has been pictorially represented by a three-legged stool. The three, what are often referred to as pillars of sustainability, are the environment, the economy, and the community. This graphic, which has probably already convinced you that my future is not in PowerPoint art, is meant to demonstrate that a sustainable decision is one that considers environmental impacts, economic impacts, as well as social impacts. Sustainable drainage, then, includes long-term environmental and social impacts in decisions about site design and best management practice selection. It considers not only quantity and quality, but also the value of stormwater. While the three-legged stool depicting sustainability is well-founded in literature, this four-legged stool illustrating sustainable engineering is my own creation. So the concept may be no better than the artwork. However, the message is that in engineering, the original purpose or function must be maintained, and the environmental, economic, and social impacts must be considered for the solution to be sustainable. The concept of stormwater management came into being as urbanization began to have negative impacts on stormwater quantity and quality. As a result, governments worldwide have adopted regulations requiring the management of stormwater. In the U.S., regulations require the use of effective best management practices, or BMPs, for all new and redevelopment projects disturbing 1 acre or more of land. The term post-construction BMPs refers to a permanent BMPs that are in place long-term. There are 17 structural BMPs listed in the U.S. EPA's toolbox for post-construction best management practices. These BMPs can be broken down into 4 main categories. The first main category of BMPs are those with the main objective of infiltrating stormwater on site, although they can be used for the purpose of treatment as well. The top photograph is an example of a grass channel. It is an engineered feature, sized and designed based on drainage area and soil type, but looks a lot like a landscape feature. Filtration BMPs have the main objective of reducing the pollutant load in the stormwater, although some of them provide volume reduction as well. The main objective of retention or detention BMPs is to delay the discharge of stormwater to a surface water body. The slow release of stormwater more closely resembles pre-development conditions. For some BMPs, this also allows time for percolation and evaporation, which reduces the volume. And some include vegetation, which provides some filtration. The last category includes 2 unique BMPs: alum injection, which is a flocculant used to coagulate fine particles so that they settle out quicker, and manufactured products like the one in the photograph on the bottom. These are proprietary engineered designs manufactured off-site and placed underground in the flow path of stormwater. They contain absorbents that capture pollutants on contact. There are many BMPs to choose from, and while each BMP can be effective when it's used in its originally intended application, what works in one location may not work in another as sites vary. This begs the question: how effective does a BMP need to be in order to be an effective BMP? Which brings me to the objective of my dissertation. It seemed to me that there was plenty of information about the different types of BMPs available, but nothing that compiled all of the information into one place so that it could easily be compared. By not choosing the most effective BMP, the negative impacts of increased or polluted runoff will continue to cause erosion and harm to human and wild and aquatic life. There are, of course, many factors to consider in the selection of a BMP. The most obvious factors are volume reduction and pollutant removal, because they are the intended function of the BMP. Since different BMPs treat different pollutants with different levels of effectiveness, it is important to consider land uses in the drainage area discharging to the BMP to determine which pollutants may be present in the runoff. There are technical factors to consider in the design of the BMP as well. Some BMPs are only effective in small drainage areas. Some require impervious soils. Some BMPs require contact with the groundwater table, while others require significant separation from groundwater. Some BMPs function better in an arid or semi-arid climate, and some rely on gravity flow and require a slight slope, whereas others must be on flat ground. Since some detention BMPs hold water in shallow ponds before releasing it to receiving waters, the temperature of the stormwater is increased. Therefore, the habitat of the receiving water should be considered, as certain detention BMPs should not be used near clear, cold water streams where native fish are temperature sensitive. In addition to these technical considerations, there are non-technical considerations that address the sustainability of the BMP. For example, many BMPs that contain absorbents require periodic replacement of the absorbents, which are then disposed of in a landfill, whereas vegetated BMPs can be mowed and the clippings can be composted. So the amount of waste generated and whether or not that waste can be recycled or composted should be considered. The cost of the construction of a BMP, as well as the cost of maintenance of the BMP, should be considered together. Catch basin inserts that fit inside the storm drain drop inlet take almost no space and cost very little, only $100. However, they require a Vactor truck for maintenance, which can cost as much as $125,000. The truck itself has to be maintained, and those costs should be considered as well. additional value provided by the BMP should also be considered. Some BMPs, such as stormwater wetlands, actually improve surrounding property value. Others eliminate flooding downstream. These economic benefits should be considered. Construction impacts include not only land disturbance, but also the transportation of construction materials to the site. The embodied energy of the BMP should also be considered. A product manufactured and transported to the site has a much higher embodied energy than a swale made of local soil and gravel. There are social advantages to some BMPs, such as keeping the water local by recharging groundwater aquifers so that the water can be used locally later. Dry detention ponds can double as sports fields during the dry season, and stormwater ponds can add aesthetic value and create recreational areas. With the large number of BMPs to choose from and the large number of factors to consider, a selection tool is needed to help design engineers, regulators, and developers identify the most appropriate best management practice or suite of best management practices for a particular application. The selection tool that I created as part of my dissertation is attachment 2 of my staff report, and I wanted to direct your attention to it as it may be easier to read your own copy rather than the version shown on the screen. The selection tool has 3 parts. The hard gates eliminate the BMPs that don't fit into the design criteria. They act as the first cut for BMPs that simply don't work at a particular site. Each of the hard gate criteria are shown in different colors across the top, and each of the BMPs are listed on the left. The BMPs are not listed in alphabetical order. However, they are grouped by those that provide volume reduction and those that do not, as volume reduction is one of the key functions of a BMP. BMPs that provide treatment but no volume reduction are still included, as they may be used in conjunction with BMPs that provide volume reduction but no treatment. Now that the options have been narrowed based on design criteria, the soft gates consider the remainder of the criteria. These soft gates include pollutant load reduction, costs, environmental impacts, and social acceptance. Since these soft gates are not yes or no questions, I have used a color code system to highlight the data so that it can be more easily visually compared. In each case, the rose color represents a more favorable option, down to the dark blue, which is least favorable. Each of the soft gate criteria are shown across the top, and each of the BMPs are listed on the left. The BMPs are grouped by pollutant load reduction performance, as that is the key function of a BMP. The construction costs and annual maintenance costs are given, and the additional costs and values of each BMP is listed by the use of a number that corresponds to the list below. An example of the additional economic value provided by some BMPs is increased property values, whereas an example of an additional economic cost may be material disposal costs. So BMPs with more additional values than costs were assigned a favorable color, and BMPs with more costs than values were assigned a less favorable color. The same was done for environmental impacts and social acceptance. The list of impacts and advantages are listed below the soft gates on the selection tool, and the color code system was assigned in the same way. The environmental benefits include things such as providing groundwater recharge, and the environmental impacts of some BMPs include such things as sorbent pillows that may have to be disposed of as hazardous waste. Some of the social benefits of BMPs include educational value and noise reduction. Social impacts include the possibility for mosquito breeding habitat and water safety concerns. After applying the soft gates, step 3 of the selection tool presents design, construction, operation, and disposal considerations to help narrow the remaining BMP options down to the best BMP for a particular site. In researching other decision-making methodologies and tools, such as multi-criteria analysis, it is clear that flowcharts that make decisions for you remove the human element and aren't conducive to issues of sustainability. Therefore, I have chosen to create a selection tool that pictorially represents the data all at once so that an informed decision can be made. Ideally, this visual selection tool will ensure that all aspects of BMP selection are considered, not just technical performance of the BMP. And hopefully it will provide a common tool for engineers, regulators, and developers to use in their discussion about the most appropriate BMP. Before the tool can be put into practice, it needs to be tested in the real world. Fortunately, a few local engineering firms have volunteered to help in that respect. Hopefully, in a matter of weeks, I will have some feedback that will allow me to begin the process of improving the tool to the point of completion. The next step will be to determine the best use for the tool. Should it go on our webpage? Should it be considered guidance? How best can we employ it, assuming it is deemed valuable? And then, once the decision is made, the next step will be to implement it in a useful fashion. Regardless of whether this is the best tool to use or not, I can assure you that we are working diligently to determine the best way possible to ensure that development on the Central Coast of California is done in a sustainable fashion. The state's population is expected to increase from 37 million people in 2005 to between 44 and 48 million people in 2025, and we intend to be ready.
So how do you see the use of this tool unfold more in this region? You're testing it now with some local engineering firms.
Yes.
And what do you see as the next couple of steps?
Okay. Well, I'm hoping to get some feedback after some of the local engineering firms test it out and actually put it into practice, determine whether or not it's intuitive to use, whether or not it provides consistently reliable results. Essentially, it's not the type of thing that gives you an answer in the end. It provides you the information so that using best professional judgment, you consider all the things that need to be considered, and then you select the right BMP in the end. So once I get some feedback from engineers that are using it, then I can improve it based on that feedback. And then once we have a selection tool that we feel can allow people to select the right BMP, then the next step is implementing it, and perhaps it will be something that we put on our webpage and use as guidance. Perhaps it will be something that we incorporate into something more formal, such as a permit or something like that. As to exactly how it will be used, I think also depends a little bit on some stakeholder feedback as well. What's the best way to implement it? But whether or not we actually use this tool as some sort of regulatory requirement or not, we are definitely working on a regulatory requirement that will make low-impact development more of a requirement within our region, more of a reality on the ground. So this selection tool would ideally be a step to help people choose the best management practice when compared to all of the others.
I could see it would be something that staff would also use.
Absolutely.
When an applicant submits a draft permit and they're saying that they've got some BMPs they want to use for one of the six categories, that this tool could be used to kind of check on that.
Absolutely. I think one of the benefits of a tool that provides all of the information in one place is that everybody can sort of be on the same page, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So not only the design engineers who are making decisions about what to implement at a particular site, but also regulators, even municipalities, making decisions about whether or not the right BMP has been selected. Even the developer themselves, if they want to understand whether or not the BMP that's been selected is the best one, hopefully that will provide them with the information to make those kinds of conversations happen on the same plane, so
Jennifer,
to speak.
Jennifer, you have some cost figures in here?
Yes.
In the Softgate Step 2?
Yes.
Are those from this region? Are they national figures? Where do they come from?
Those are national figures, and you'll see at the bottom of the selection tool, I list my data sources.
Right.
Most of those cost figures come from the US EPA webpage, which the webpage is actually quoting literature that I found that was peer-reviewed and substantiated literature. So those costs are national costs. In most cases, they are current costs. In some cases, they could be a year or two old. It's hard to get up-to-the-minute cost data. But the value of comparing these, although costs surely will change, as does anything. It's always hard to put down a dollar value because costs change. The value of putting them here where you can compare them to one another is that you can evaluate how one BMP's cost, not only for construction but also for maintenance, compares to other BMP's costs. So, does that answer your question?
It's very interesting. Yeah, and congratulations, you know, on getting through that program and doing so well with it.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed with what you've put together, because this is your own compilation.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, I also want to congratulate you on what was obviously a very compressed year, but I guess that's the graduate school experience. And I'm really interested, of course, in the fact that you have looked at this in a more, in a context that allows for some on-the-ground issues that don't often get weighed in, especially in the early stages. And, of course, as a social scientist, I'm most interested that you've incorporated, at least in this framework, there's a social acceptance set of kind of factors. And I know that coming up with metrics for social factors is really the challenge. And that, I think, is something that all social scientists that engage in environmental problem solving are grappling with. And so I think, you know, there's a lot here to consider. And the fact that you're getting engineers to look at it is always very exciting to me. But I am curious, and I don't want to spend too much time, but the social acceptance column here in the table in step two is color-coded, but there's no key for it. So I was curious how you ranked the favorable to least favorable, or is that something that comes out directly out of stakeholder defining what that is, or how does that work?
Oh, actually, I mentioned it in my presentation, but I went really quickly, so I'll describe it in maybe a little more slowly this time, because the way in which I came up with the color coding system for the additional costs and values, the environmental impacts, and the social acceptance, so all three of those columns, was that I took the benefits and impacts listed in literature, and then I listed those out, and you can see those, of course, are listed below. So those are listed out, and those numbers are then placed in the column. So then the way in which I assigned the color code system was simply to say if there were more benefits than impacts, then it got a more favorable color. If there were more impacts than benefits, it got a less favorable color. And it's on a scale so that they're all sort of equivalent to one another, so that they can be compared to one another. And, of course, I realize I'm just an engineer making some decisions about social impacts. This is probably not the most scientific way to go about evaluating some social impacts versus others, because clearly one thing may be extremely beneficial, whereas something is only a small impact. I haven't measured the amount of benefit versus the amount of impact, just strictly that there are, say, four benefits and two impacts. That's, more. So just so that it can be compared in a visual type of way, which is why the information is actually listed below, so that if you don't choose to trust the color coding system, the information is there so that you can understand where it came from and then make your own decisions based on that, because you might choose a different color. It might be more or less favorable to you based on how important that benefit is versus an impact. So it was just...
That's where I think this could set a framework...
Sure.
Which then could build from stakeholder kind of process to help
Absolutely.
Put those values into perspective relative to a particular location, a particular area. But I really appreciate the effort of trying to bring that into perspective and in a framework that kind of equates some of these different goals. Because without the social acceptance, as you note in your thesis, which I read, thank you for sending me a hard copy. I really appreciate that. That's really the key to everything we do.
Absolutely.
It's that ultimately we change behavior. We change, the value system that drives behavior, and that we are finding people in their communities willing to do what needs to be done in terms of costs, in terms of electing leaders that are going to carry out those values. And part of what we do here is, in part we have the enforcement end of things, but we also have the opportunity to be part of the leadership in encouraging these changes that we know have to happen. And we need to bring the communities along with us.
Absolutely.
So I'm really excited by your work, and I'll look forward to, I guess we'll hear something about how the first pilot test went for your effort here. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other board comments or questions?
Yeah, I thought
she was going to come back speaking English.
What happened?
Well, you see, she learned how to spell favorable.
One thing you and I spoke about earlier today, which I'd like the rest of the board to hear, is that you're going to be looking at how to take LID standards and kind of embed them into some of our processes so that they are required instead of kind of voluntary.
Yeah.
Do you want to share with us?
Sure. I can even back up a little bit just briefly and sort of tell you how I decided to make this selection tool as a part of my dissertation. I originally went to Cambridge with the purpose thinking I was going to, my dissertation would be figuring out how to require LID. So I thought I'll make a tool, I'll do something to prove the LID is better than all the other types of BMPs. And I came to realize that clearly it's not legitimate to just sort of present only one side of the story and say, well, here's the benefits that you get from LID without comparing it to other BMPs. And so when I started to compare it to other BMPs, it became evident that the low-impact development BMPs clearly rise to the top time and time again, whether you're talking about pollutant load reduction or whether you're talking about construction costs, disposal costs, environmental impacts in any level, social acceptance. It just keeps rising to the top, which was kind of nice to see, when, especially when you're coming at it just from a, without placing judgment, just from a comparison value. So I hope that this selection tool will, when used, will be credible to anyone using it, because it includes all the BMPs, not just LID BMPs, but all 17 BMPs listed in the US EPA's menu of BMPs. So I included them all to make it even more credible to anyone that might be using it. So, but then if that's not convincing, if it isn't convincing that that those BMPs should still be selected, we are, of course, interested in making low-impact development more of a reality within our region, because as has been stated many times, we're lucky on the Central Coast of California to still be in a position where we have not paved over everything yet. And we're hoping that we can prevent those things from happening. And as we know, growth is coming, and it's coming quickly. It's not something that is, generations away. California is going to be growing, and it's going to happen here on the Central Coast, and we want to be ready to address those issues immediately. So what I am looking at doing now that I'm back is figuring out the best way not only to implement this selection tool, but to make low-impact development a reality in our region, whether that means a basin plan amendment or whether that means incorporating it into a permit, whether it's a Region 3 permit or a watershed permit, or there are lots of different kinds of basin plan amendments that could be done. We could make basin plan prohibitions. We could make beneficial use designations, making infiltration a beneficial use, and floodplain the use of floodplains, a beneficial use for surface water bodies. So there's tons of different ways we can go about this. So when I came back, I was ready to go about it. And but there was lots of different regions doing lots of different things. And so the first thing I wondered was, well, why have all the different regions taken many different approaches? You would expect different approaches because different regions are just different in general, politically, economically, socially, lots of different in the different parts of the state of California. So I'd expect differences. But what I wanted to know was, why were these differences occurring specifically? Why had certain regions chosen basin plan amendments, whereas other regions have chosen to write permits that are sort of more of an end-of-pipe kind of solution? So post-construction versus pre-development conditions have to be the same. That would be sort of an end-of-pipe type scenario. Requiring the use of BMPs, that would be more of a source control. So there's all these different things that are going on in different regions. And so what I'm in the process of doing is figuring out not only what regions are doing, but why. And that's the most interesting part to me, is to discover the why. Sometimes it's political reasons, sometimes it's technical reasons, sometimes it's based on what they tried first and didn't work, and so they're amending it to work better. So my goal is to figure out what is going on in all of the different regions, why they're doing what they're doing, figure out the best way to do it here based on the type of region that we have, and then ideally I hope to come back before you and recommend a particular way to go about requiring low-impact development. And it may be more than one way that might surface.
You know, I thought what was interesting that you shared with me before was the development of a Region 3 swamp, which I didn't know that we could do that. But we could essentially, and staff could draft a general swamp for Region 3.
Oh, do you mean general permit?
Yeah,
or,
a general permit.
General permit for
A swamp permit.
Yes, yeah.
For
a
Region 3,
two.
And it could have what we feel is necessary for Region 3. And this would supersede the state's general permit, general swamp. So,
could even have specifics in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could. Yeah, the detail that we'd like to see. So that could be very very interesting thing that comes online. That as we're moving through these startup years with these swamps, that we maybe have, when the renewal comes up, boom, staff has something ready, if that's what it is, to go ahead and
We could have color coded.
I like it.
Yeah. So is this gentleman with you? I'm just curious.
Dr. Cota.
Yes.
Is that who you're referring to?
Yes.
As you know, Dr. Cota is a former member of the regional board. He once sat in the same place as many of you. And he was also my professor at Cal Poly, at the Department of Environmental Engineering at Poly.
Welcome.
So he's come to lend some
support. So you're very proud of her too, right?
She did a good job.
Yeah.
You want to sit up here for a while?
Yeah.
I noticed that the county of San Luis, when they were giving their presentation, they mentioned the tool and said that they will be using it.
I know. So, I was surprised.
You mentioned the consultants, but municipalities are also.
Yeah, I have not yet done outreach to municipalities, mainly because I wanted to work with consultants to see if it's actually practical and works, and then work with municipalities to see if it makes sense to them as well. So, but they're already on top of it. They've found it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Ready to go.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations again, and we look forward to, updates on your progress and then the recommendation you want to make, to the board on how to get LID implemented.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.